Hello guys, welcome to episode 8 of the Offside Show, where our mission is to empower, impact, and help soccer players achieve their goals. So in today's episode, we have my good friend, Chris Gardia, which for the ones that don't know, he recently joined the personal training academy, Magis, here in Memphis. I think it's what, their third, fourth month now, right? With us. So he's become a brother to me and all the team. So really looking forward. I'm excited to have you here, Chris, on the show and explain a little bit of your life and your experience.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I appreciate it.
Awesome. But I guess let's get started with, kind of like your background, like what age you start playing soccer and what got you into soccer?
So I started playing soccer recreationally around like 3 years old, to be honest. The big thing for me was just like anything that my older brother, I have an older brother who's like 2.5 years older than me. So anything that he was doing, like I wanted to be doing it. Just like all young kids, you know, go through different, you know, oh, I like baseball, I like basketball, throwing those things around. But some reason between the two of us, soccer ball, I just always stuck. So I got to play when I was three. I got to play with like the 5 and 6 year olds right here, actually in Olive Branch Parks Recreation Park right here in DeSoto County. It was my first the debut for Coach Chris.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I did that, and like I said, the reason was for sure just because my brother, like anything that he was doing, I wanted to be right there by his side or doing it with him or whatever. So he's really the one that that got me into it.
That's awesome. And I mean, you make a point there that from that, I mean, just starting out, you were playing already with older kids. So yeah. We might be jumping here a little bit, but what do you feel about that? Do you think that had an impact? I mean, you were very young still. I mean, you were only 3 years old, but do you think that had an impact in your, you know, soccer life, soccer career moving forward, like from a young age playing with older guys and just being getting used to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that was really my story my entire life, my whole youth career. I actually played up either a year or two, not until my senior year of high school, I actually played my actual age. It's kind of weird though, because I'm technically a 93, but where my birth date fell, I was truly 94 and that whole thing. So I actually played with the 93s for MFC, my almost entire youth career. And again, that was a year up. So it was good for me personally, just development as far as like, you know, there was that, you know, that seventh to eighth grade to freshman year where everybody hit, you know, maturity and puberty, and I hadn't yet. And so it was me trying to figure those things out, especially playing center mid, having to be, you know, physical and having to be figuring out ways, because I wasn't big and I wasn't strong, to kind of manipulate that situation a little bit. So I think it matured me pretty quickly when it came to that. But also it was really cool too, because my brother and I had the same club coach. And so when we would practice like right after each other, so my team would practice first and then his team would practice after. So I was training with my team and then his team. So I was playing like normal every day with my team a year older. And then I was also doing training and doing stuff like that with my brother's team again, who was 2.5, 3 years older than me. So I've always been in that environment of like playing with older people. And again, like I said earlier, I think it matured me not only on the soccer field, but it really humbled me as a person too. You know what I mean? So we always joke about it, but it was cool because like everybody on my brother's team, they treated me like I was their teammate's little brother. Like always, you know, they wouldn't take it easy on me, knocking me down, you know, just making sure they made it as tough on me as possible, which in the moment kind of sucked. You know, it was kind of like, what the heck? Like, like I'm 3 years younger than you. Why are you tackling me like that? But now in the long run, and like looking back as an adult, it's like I'm really appreciative for those people doing that, because it made me grow up really fast.
Yeah, and I think it's such an important topic, because I mean, I feel like especially here in the US, it's weird. I mean, I guess it depends, right? It depends on the coach that you have. It depends on your environment, but overall, there's always like this thing, like, hey, you can only train certain amount of days. You can only do certain things. You're only with your age, where, I mean, everywhere else in the world, I mean, because it happened to me as well. When I was younger, I was always, you know, bumpy up. They would jump me up with the older guys, or I will do, you know, train with my team and then stay and train with another team afterwards. So I think it's so important that for the development of the kids, you know, experience those things and experience, and you said it, right? Experience being uncomfortable because, you know, it's not easy, right? Being a soccer player, it's not easy. And those little wins that you start encounter throughout your career is what I think separates you.
And I think so too. Like, I think in America, like you kind of mentioned, I think we, you know, parents and coaches, I don't think like when I say this, but I mean, I think we coddle a little bit too much, you know, cause I mean, for me, at least the obvious reason that it seems to not let younger players go to play with olders is because they'll get injured, which you're right. But I mean, if you're a proper coach and you're a proper trainer, then you're teaching kids how to manage those things. Because I mean, just like we said too earlier, I mean, we here in America play in our own age group until we get to the most important part of our lives, which is college soccer. And then all of a sudden we have to play against, we're 18, 17, 18 years old. We're playing against 23, 22, 23 year olds. Yeah. You know what I mean? And for some people, that's the first time they ever play against older, more mature, and not just mature physically, but like mature mentally. I mean, that's the biggest thing is like knowing when to go into tackles, when not to go into tackles, like how to manage your body during a game. Like, you know what I mean? So you can only learn those things through experience and through playing against older players who have been there and like had that experience, you know? So I think it's crazy important that kids, you know, start to experiment. And that's why, like, and I know we'll probably get to it here in a little while, but that's why, like, with the whole high school scene, like, I'm kind of torn, because it's good because you're playing against older people, but the quality of those older people isn't always the best. And so that's where, you know, that kind of on that line. But anyway, yeah, I think it definitely helped me tremendously playing with olders and being around older people my entire life.
Yeah, no, definitely. And well, you touched already into high school. We're going to get into that. I know you went to CBHS. Well, for the people that don't know, we do most of our training sessions at CBHS. I've gotten to meet, you know, the people at the school. We love them. They're amazing people, by the way. We're super grateful that they allow us to use their space. Shout out to them. But in those 4 years that we've been there, I've noticed, of course, I didn't go to school there, but I noticed there is like kind of this brotherhood, this culture, environment around it. So I would love for you to explain a little about that, if that's true, and what makes CBHS special compared to other high schools in Memphis?
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, it was, so I went there for 3 years. I transferred there my sophomore year. I actually went to DeSoto Central down in DeSoto County my freshman year. My brother was a senior and I was a freshman. And so that was the one time that we actually got to play together, you know, for my parents and for my family, we got to do that for them, which is really cool. So I transferred there my sophomore year. And to be honest, like, it wasn't really my scene, like that, the whole vibe of, you know, just the all guy thing, you know, the preppiness of it, you know, that really wasn't, I mean, the tattoos, you know, doesn't really match with that, but, yeah. But, you know, I went in, I tried at least to go in with the open of mind if possible, like trying to see like, okay, well, at least the soccer is really good. I know education wise, it's a really good school. You know, they always have people going to different great schools all the time. So, so I tried to go in with an open mind in that sense, but I mean, it was difficult. Like it was difficult because with a school like that, you mentioned earlier, like brotherhood and camaraderie and like having these long relationships is a thing. And even after you graduate from Christian Brothers, like you still always go back to Christian Brothers for events and for, you know, reunions and football games and blah, blah, blah. So like that lineage of connection between players and just students alike, I mean, it starts from when they're in middle school, because a lot of them go to, you know, the local school, St. Louis, and all these schools grow up together. And then from there they filter into the different high schools and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, for me, I missed out on that whole time before. You know, I went into a whole new environment. I mean, I knew some people because of soccer and playing in the city of Memphis and this and that and the other, but if you weren't soccer related, like I didn't really know that many people. So on the social side of things, it was a bit difficult at the beginning, but just like every other moment in my life, soccer saved my life. And it was, you know, we had a great season, my first season, the sophomore year. And we actually won the state championship my sophomore year, which was so great. It's something that, you know, when you're playing in DeSoto Central and DeSoto County, you don't ever think about winning a state championship or anything like that. So, so for the next season to win a state championship, it was really cool, you know, and to do it in front of, you know, a school that actually cares about sports and actually cares about the athletic programs and stuff like that. It was really cool. But soccer wise, it was great. I had Coach Raj, Rogerio Lima. Shout out to Coach Raj. Love him to death. He's over at Lausanne now, but love him to death. He was a difficult human being to deal with sometimes. But I think our personalities did clash sometimes, but I think in the end, he taught me a lot, man. He taught me a lot about the game. He taught me, he's Brazilian. So he taught me a lot about the, not just the game of soccer, but the culture of soccer and how it's seen over in Brazil. And he actually took us over to Brazil. We were super fortunate where he actually took us over to Brazil, my senior year of high school. Wow. Where we went and it was a combined kind of like mission trip, but also a soccer trip as well. So we got to do some really cool events with some local schools and local churches in the community that we were staying in, which was awesome on the social side of things. And then obviously on the soccer side, I mean, we got to play against local teams around the city. We got to play against Flamengo's U16s right before they went to the Club World Cup in Rio de Janeiro. So that was cool. It was a long game, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, it was one of the first times for me personally that I've seen, like, and you and I, for just that, yes, they're good, but there's just that, there's something different. Like, there's just something different about the way they play. It's just something natural. It's something that, I don't know, but it was the first time that I had seen it in person and played against it. And it was awesome, man. It was really, really cool.
And with that, then let me ask you, like, how important, like, what was the impact that that experience had in your life? Not only soccer-wise, of course, but in your life overall, because I feel like not many people do that here in Memphis. And I'm from Venezuela. Back in Venezuela, I mean, I did it like 3-4 times, and the impact was huge. And it's kind of common, at least for the school that I went to, for people to do that.
Yeah.
And here, you don't see it much, right? And for multiple factors, you know, that we don't need to get into that, but I know that it was very impactful for me. So I just wanted to ask you, in what ways it impacted you soccer-wise and for your life specifically?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, soccer-wise, the obvious reasons of, like, you know, I thought I was good and I'm really not compared to those players right there. So that would be a good humbling experience of, wow, like, I have a lot of work to do and I'm excited for that work, but also, wow, you know? So just recognize, I think that was the first time, I think, where I could truly say I saw a recognition of, like, levels to the game. Like, yeah, you can be good, but then there's just a different level. And that's why you have pros and you have not pros. So that was for soccer. And I think that was the biggest kind of, like, eye opener for me there. But personally, like, life thing, I mean, it was, you know, you're traveling with a school, a private school, in America, you know, that fortunate enough, our facilities are beautiful, you know, academics wise, you know, we have everything that we need and so on and so forth. The list goes on and on. And then to go over there where a lot of these people have nothing. I mean, it's very, very, very humbling. I mean, I know we have that in the US and I know we have that in different cities around our country here personally. But in that situation that we were in, it's just sad. You know, it was very humbling. It was very sad. It was very, but at the same time sad, but it was also, selfishly, I guess I can say it was very, very worth it to go over there and to experience some of the experiences that we had. I mean, I remember, we were having dinner. It was such a kind of a mind boggler and, like, so total opposite of the spectrum when we were eating in this Brazilian restaurant, you know, one of the ones where they shave the food off for you, and, like, you have your card, and then when you're done, you flip your card or whatever. So very high end, like, beautiful, nice meal. And down, like, out the window downstairs, we saw some kids playing soccer, and they were playing soccer with, you know, classically Brazilians, they were playing soccer with a bunch of, like, socks and like clothes that were in a ball, and they had tape around it and they were using that as a ball. Right. And so we had just come from training. And so, I don't know, something inside of me, you know, this isn't to toot my own horn or whatever, but it was a moment that, like, I try and seek even now in my personal life now of trying to make a little bit of difference. So a couple of buddies and myself went and grabbed one of our soccer balls, and we went down and we started playing with them. Like, we just started, you know, the kids were maybe 10, 11, 12, you know, started playing. And, you know, obviously language barrier was there, but, you know, when you're playing soccer, there was no barrier. It was, hey, you're on that team, I'm on this team, you score and I score here, like, let's play. You play for like 30, 40 minutes, and And I think one of the most amazing parts about it was like, we got done, we were leaving, and these kids like came up to give us our ball back. Like they were like, thank you so much. Like, you know, here's your ball back. And we were just like, you know, you can have it. Like it's, yeah, it's your ball. And to, for them even to like still be like, no, no, it's like, thank you, but it's yours. Like even that appreciation and that like humbleness on their side of things was, I mean, it was crazy, you know, and to come back and to think that, again, I come back to Christian Brothers High School and I complain about anything is just, you know, beyond me. So it was a really cool experience. And we saw a lot of things like that. We saw a lot of people who were in situations that, that things like soccer and things like little jobs can only get them out of situations. And it was very interesting. It was very, very humbling. And it was a great experience all around for sure.
Man, that's crazy. And that's why I think like those experiences are so important. Yeah. I mean, you still remember about that and you're going to remember that moment for the rest of your life, right? And that's why I think soccer is the most beautiful sport in the world, right? Because it's like, it teaches you so many things that help you with whatever you want to do in life, with everything that you do. So that's why I think that every time that I talk to a player and there's an opportunity for like a trip, like go somewhere, maybe it's not South America, maybe it's Europe, a tournament, whatever it is, like do it, right? Do it, because the growth that you get from that, it's beyond the soccer field. And absolutely, for people listening here, the number one excuse is the money, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. I know it's expensive, it's not cheap, of course, but I'm the type of person that I'm always like, there's ways to make it work. There's always a way to make it work. Always, you can find a sponsorship. You can find a way to make it work. So definitely for everybody listening, if you're a coach, you're a manager of a team or of a club, whatever, you know, make your player experience those things, because it's life changing for sure.
Yeah, I would even for sure say on the player side, because I had some opportunities over my playing career to where, you know, coaches or scouts or whatever be like, oh, hey, you know, we have this opportunity for you over in Latvia in the third division. It's like, but then for me, you know, being, oh, but I want to play in the MLS, but I want to play in blah, blah, blah. It was just like, oh, Latvia, no, I don't want to. But like now looking back, I'm like, yeah, but I could have lived in Latvia. Like I'll never have probably the opportunity to live in Latvia again. I don't even know what it's like over there, but like it would have been a totally new experience. I would have gotten it. So that's, I think, and that's what I've told a lot of my older players, like, even if you can't make it to, you know, Division I, MLS, blah, 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 whatever it is, like, there's leagues over there that, like, just go, just play. And then, like, and then when you come back, that's on your resume. And, like, a lot of people here won't really take consideration, oh, the Latvia, oh, that was third division. Oh, what are they? No, they're just going to see, oh, you played internationally, you got experience, you got, you know, foreign experience, you got all these things, which are huge, vital, not only for soccer, but for, like we were saying earlier, like for life too, you know what I mean? I think it really matures you if you can go over and see different things like that. So I, like, again, one thing that I didn't do, that if I could tell players and coaches or whoever who's listening, like, experience those things, like go use soccer for the experience. If you're not going to use soccer, if you can't use soccer, if you're not fortunate enough to use soccer for making millions of dollars and blah, 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 like use it for those experiences, man. Like you'll never get those experiences back. And if a little ball can take you around the world and see different things, like why not? You know what I mean? Why not?
Yeah. That's so powerful, man. Yeah. Like I have this friend that I play with in a summer team. He's from Spain. He graduated from playing at college. And he just went to Australia and he just played. He played 2 years in Australia. And I was like, oh, man, it's so much fun. You know, like he played 2 years. He had fun. He enjoyed it. He played at a high level. I think it was not like pro, like first division. Probably was like third or second division.
Yeah.
But he lived in Australia and the other side of the world for 2 years, you know, training every day. And now he's back in Spain. You know, he's doing his own thing. But sure, I'm the same with you. I wish like I did some of those things. It's just like, you know, you only get a period, right? You're not a soccer player for the rest of your life, right? So it's like making the most of every opportunity that you get. But anyways, then, well, the big question, we kind of touched on it. We've spoken on it before. Should players play high school soccer? What do you think about that?
I hate to say that it depends on the high school, but you know, because my high school experience was good, because one, I was already committed to college my sophomore year of high school. So I kind of had an idea of where I was going to go to college. And so for me, like that got personally, that relaxed me a lot as far as like, oh, well, I have to do this, I have to do that. For me, like my high school experience was stay sharp, stay clean, stay healthy. Like, that's it. Just get ready. Be ready for the first day of preseason in college. Like, I didn't have to worry about, oh, I have to play well here to get that person to look at me or blah, 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 blah. Like, so personally, like that was my experience. And then every day for me, for Christian Brothers, again, I was crazy fortunate, the team that I played on, when I played on that team. I mean, dude, we had players who like 4, 5, 6 Division I players, Division II players, big guys who, you know, just some really, really, really good players on our team. So for me, the in and out every day of training was like good. Like, it was sometimes my training in high school was actually sometimes better than my club training. Cause again, some guys were older and good and blah, blah, blah. So, but again, it's tough because you do go to some high schools where, you know, more of like the public school areas where you'll have 2 or 3 really good players who play club, but then you'll also have like a senior who needs a PE credit and they're going to go and kick a ball around. You know what I mean? And for them, like, they don't know how to control their body. They don't know how to do this. They don't know how to do that. And, you know, I tell kids all the time, it takes one sophomore or one freshman to go and meg somebody or, you know, embarrass, you know, an old senior who's never played soccer in their life before. And, you know, that senior doesn't care. I mean, they're not going to play soccer after this, but you know, you may have a career going forward and one injury away from not having that career. So that's always the sketchy thing for me. And again, I recognize too, like, that can happen at any time, any place, any game. I understand, but I personally think that that percentage of potentially getting injured, like, goes way up. Like, it goes way up when you're in those situations. But, you know, on the flip side too, you know, we have a lot of players who play high school and it's fun. Like, it's fun. You get to play in front of your friends come to the game, you know, you have pep rallies for you, you have, you know, you get your banner, you get your picture. I get it. Like, it's really fun. So in that sense, like, I always try and tell my players, like, it should be a growth area for you mentally. Like, this should be a soccer IQ season for you. Like, cool, go score goals, go get your assists, blah, 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 show off, get your stats for your friends, whatever. But also, like kind of like we tapped on earlier, like, find out ways to manage the game when you're up against players who you think, A, you know, could potentially hurt you, B, who aren't as good as you, C, blah, 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 list goes on and on and on, right? So like I kind of mentioned earlier, okay, 50-50 tackle against someone who's bigger than me. Do I really need to win that tackle, or can I be smart and can I get myself in a position to, when that person takes their first touch, then maybe I can take the ball, or I can force them away, or I can team defend, or whatever it is. So when it comes to high school soccer, I just challenge players to do that, to think more about the game than like think about the physical side of the game. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it also depends on where you are, right? I mean, what part of the country you are. Cause, like, for example, in Memphis, there's not a single like academy team or MLS Next or whatever you call it here. Yeah. There's not a single one. So it's like their best option is to go play for a good high school team, right? Because normally if they stay with their club, which they could, first of all, they have to convince everybody on their team to play club.
Right.
And then, you know, it's impossible to convince every single person to play club, but, you know, because at least half of them minimum wants to play for the high school.
Right.
And so your only option is, okay, I got to find the best high school possible to play to, right? But it's not an easy decision. It's not like picking red or blue, right? I mean, it's a big decision. So no, I agree with you, right? I mean, we're in the same boat. I think high school, it just depends on what you want to do, right? If you want to play, you want to make it to the highest level possible, then maybe high school is not the right thing for you. But if you want to play just to have fun, enjoy it, hey, make the most of it, and then why not, right? I mean, I think that's valid too. But then you mentioned there a little bit that you were already committed your sophomore year of high school. And I would like to know, how was your college recruitment process? What were some things that you pay attention to and how you made that happen in order for you to get that commitment to playing in college? Because as you know, man, we coach many players that are in that process right now.
Right.
And it's not an easy road. And I think like many people, it's hard for people because people don't know. You know, it happened to me coming from another country. I didn't know a single thing about college recruitment, what to do. I mean, I committed to Memphis. I didn't know anything about Memphis. I made many mistakes. So If you could share kind of like how was your experience and what were some things that you paid attention to?
Right, right. Yes. So believe it or not, like a lot of my knowledge and a lot of my, what I think is knowledge and opinions about, you know, the recruiting process honestly has come from me being a coach, because like, as I mentioned, you know, super fortunate. My brother played for University of Memphis for a year. I had friends, JJ Greer, I've had friends who played for the University of Memphis, and I was just around being at Mike Rose every weekend. Like you're just around all that environment, around that community. And so I was fortunate enough to kind of get on at the time. It was, at the time, it was Coach Richie Grant, who's now coaching out at Bakersfield in California. At the time, I kind of caught his eye. I was on his radar, like in like seventh, eighth grade. He would come out and play. You know, families became friends, and so on and so forth. And so, I had committed. I committed my sophomore year, and that was really, to be honest, without doing anything. Like I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like I was, and there's two for me. I always tell people there's two sides of that, a good and a bad. One, the good being, I got a full scholarship to go play Division I soccer, you know, at a decent school that was at the time we were transferring from the Conference USA to the American Athletic Conference, which was huge, you know, great competition, so on and so forth. And but on the back end, like for me, like the experience of that whole situation and experience, like I missed out on it. Like I didn't really go on college visits. I didn't really go to ID camps. I didn't really do any of those things because I committed so early. And a part of me kind of thinks about that a little bit, like, you know, because I was fortunate enough my junior going into my senior year to make the regional team for ODP. And so I got to travel to California and play against, you know, Santa Barbara and play against teams on the regional team and blah, blah, blah. Like it was coaches everywhere. It was great. But like, I was locked in. Like I had interest from teams like Michigan State and the Air Force Academy and things like that, but I was already kind of locked in. And so, I think I committed a little early, but you know, I made the best of my situation and what I did. But, anyway, like I said, I think a lot of the information, a lot of stuff that I've learned has been more through the coaching aspect and seeing kids kind of like, you know, coming in their sophomore year thinking that they have so much time. And I ask them, oh, okay, like, what are you thinking about? Oh yeah, I want to go play college soccer, but okay, well, what have you, you know, what movements are you making to do that? Oh, nothing yet. Like, well, do you know where you want to, you know what I mean? And those questions, the same questions keep asking. And like you said earlier, like no one knows. And I think that's the biggest thing, especially here in the South. Like everybody thinks that, you know, because we're such a football dominant, a basketball dominant, a baseball dominant region, that like, you know, you see football players all the time. Oh, I got a scholarship to Alabama and to Georgia. And like, cause they just come, cause they have the money. The schools have the money. Just be like, oh, you want a scholarship? Oh, take one. Go take one. You know, and you have 60 players on a team. It's not the case of soccer. And a lot of parents don't understand that concept of like, you have a roster of 25 kids and like half, if not a quarter of the money that a football or a basketball or someone like that's getting, you know what I mean? And they don't understand. But the way that I always kind of guide parents and coaches, I mean, and excuse me, and players, is it's a business. Like it's 100% a business. Like these coaches are investing their money on you to make sure that you come and win them games. You know what I mean? So
exactly,
you have to make sure that you're the best you academically, physically, socially is a big one too. Because you don't want to go in and be the bad apple either. You know what I mean? We all had those on our team where we had that one guy that was just like, dude, come on. Like you forgot your cleats again. Like you're late again. Like that's on the team. You know, you don't want to be that guy, because that's not the coach's job. And I think it kind of stuns parents when I say this as well, because as much as college coaches say, yeah, like we're going to bring this young boy or this young girl in at 18, 17 year old, and when they leave here, they're going to be a man or a woman. We're going to, like, yeah, the whole system will do that. But like the coach's job is to make sure that they're ready to win games for him, so that coach doesn't lose their job.
Exactly. That's it.
It's as simple as that. You know what
that's
I mean? It's
it. Not,
it's as simple as that. So I think once players and parents kind of get that through their mind and recognizing that, like, unfortunately, unless you're on the national team, unless you're doing things, like unless you're really high profile already, people aren't going to come out of the woodwork and be like, oh, hey, you want a scholarship? Like, you have to go and be proactive and do things like that.
Yeah, man, especially in Memphis, like we were talking about it. There's no academy team. There's no, none of that. And each year there's more academy teams. There's more USL teams, development academies, and we don't have one yet. So people here need to get out of the way and kind of like reach out, go to ID camps, go to do stuff. And you got to start early. And man, with your comment in regards to, you know, making sure you're getting ready to college, it's so important. The thing is that many kids before going to college, this might hurt some people, but some of their things are just given to them. So it's like they're not used to, you know, they're not committed enough, right? Yeah. They don't put the work needed. It's the time management, right?
You're talking to one. You're talking. I mean, yeah, and I tell kids, I tell parents all the time that, like, sometimes I hate being the example, but if me not doing what I had to do when I had to do it is needed, that the example needed to get through some of these players in parents' heads, and I'm totally okay with that, because I ran into too many players that are such good players, such good people, but they get missed out on. They get skipped. They get overlooked because they're not doing the things to be proactive. Because again, I'll be the first to admit it. I'm an adult, and it was years ago. So I'm mature enough now to see and recognize that, like, I was the best player in the city of Memphis my senior year, but that didn't help me. Like, it didn't help at all, because I thought I'm the best player. Like, I'm going to go into University of Memphis and continue to be the best player. But it's one of those things, like, dude, you're a 17-year-old kid coming and playing with guys who have been playing at the collegiate level, if not, you know, some, you know, dabbling professional things for 3-4 years now. Like, you're nobody, you know what I mean? And then that has to be known.
Exactly. Yeah. And they go to a place in college, and that's when, hey, two-a-days start happening, right? Two-a-days is quick preseason fitness test. You have classes, you have to make sure you have good grades, and it's so quick. And then, oh, I'm burned out. Of course you're burned out, because you didn't prepare for this, right? Yeah. It's a process. And it happens many times, especially with what we do. I feel like, because kids have a busy schedule. I mean, we get that. But it's like, all right, but if you want to get better, if you want to get there, you got to do extra work. And sometimes parents are like, oh, but it's too much. Or like, oh, there's a football game on Friday, and can we change the time or the day of the training? Well, when your kid goes to college, if he plays or she plays in college, all right, we'll see about that. So it's I don't know. It's a big, we could spend an hour just talking about that topic. But anyways, and I know that you play for Memphis, and then you decided to transfer out to California, to school in Cali. If you could explain a little bit, how was that process? How do you encounter the transfer situation? Because I feel like there's this, I don't know if it's a myth or how to call it, but some people say that, oh, transferring is very, very hard, or like some people don't know how to approach that to the coach, right? I mean, like, how to approach that, and how was that experience for you, and what tips could you give in regards to a situation?
Yeah, no, and I think, again, I was super fortunate in my situation, because, you know, Richard Maroney, University of Memphis, is probably one of the nicest human beings in the world. Like, just like one of the nicest guys ever, like, soccer wise and personally. So, you know, and for me, like, my objective, my goal, like, it was for me, like, it was something that I feel like I needed. Things were going well. I wasn't, you know, the best player on the University of Memphis. I was getting minutes. I got injured my freshman year. So I was coming back from injury. I was trying to make my way back, but on the personal side of life, like, I felt like I was just doing this. Like, I felt like I was just doing the same thing every day, and I didn't feel like I was personally growing. And so that was really, like, the reason that I moved. And I had aspirations to do stuff after college and blah, 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 that I figured would be a little bit easier out in California. But I honestly just went in, and I was a human being. Like, I just tried to be as genuine, and I tried to be as much as a human being as possible, and just be like, hey, this obviously has nothing to do with you in the program. You guys are great. You've been great. I haven't had any issues. You guys haven't had any issues with me. Like, for me and my personal life and my growth and my development, not only in soccer, but as a human being, like, this is something that I think I need to do. And, you know, how do you tell somebody, like, no, that's not what you need to do to be a better human. You know what I mean? That'd be a very hard argument for him to have against me. So yeah, like, it was just a genuine, just going in and being human and being open and being okay with, like, laying it out on the table, letting him know, because I know I could have easily been like, oh, you're not playing me and you're not this and you're not that. But, you know, with that comes him not releasing me, and then me having to sit out a year and blah, 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 blah. So I think that was a big thing. And then obviously too, I went from a Division I school to Division II school. So there was going to be no impact on him. Like, you know, if I was transferring from University of Memphis to Louisville in the same conference, like, he probably would have had a little bit of an issue with that. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're just going to leave them to go play against us. Like, so I think for him, it made sense. Like, again, I went in the most mature way that I could. And then the stipulations behind it as far as why I was doing it, and it wasn't going to affect him in the long run and blah, blah, blah. I think that's what kind of made it a little bit easier, but also with the support of the university, the support of, you know, all the staff and the academic advising who helped me, because I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. That's the hardest part about it. The academic side of things is just obviously the most difficult and hard to understand side of the whole process. But you know, when you're a student athlete, take advantage of those things. You know what I mean? Take advantage of leaning on counselors, leaning on advisory, leaning on those things to help you guide. I mean, that's what they're there for. They're help to guide and counsel your life in your college career. So they definitely helped a lot as well. And as far as getting.
Hello guys. I'm sorry. We had a little technical issue, but we're back. So Chris, you were talking about, you know, how you use, I mean, tools that you could use when you decide to transfer to another school, and you were talking about counselors, advisors, and things like that. And man, I cannot relate more to you, because coming from another country, I don't know if this happened to you, but I was amazed of how many tools the universities have for your success. Like I couldn't believe it. Like, to me, in my eyes, I mean, I was like, shit, if you don't do good here, it's like, you just don't want to do good, right?
Try,
Everything. I mean, if you, and I know we're talking about transferring, but like, if you're struggling with a class, it's like you had a tutor and it's for free. You don't pay for that. You know, everything is included in as being an athlete. Or if you're books, they give you books. If this, you need, and you need tools, they give you tools. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like you laid it out perfectly, because the tools are there for you. It's just a matter of using them if you need them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, cool. Then I also want to know, I mean, you moved like literally all across the country. You know, you moved to California. And I want to know what impact did have that had on your life, right? If it was tough to move all the way across, or it was something that you arrived there and you felt like home right from the start.
Yeah. So my family lives in California. So my dad is from California. I have cousins, a bunch of family, aunts, uncles, all that good stuff. So I periodically would go to California, and California was always the end goal after college, or, you know, in the future for an adult life. Like I just really enjoy it. It's more, it's more me, like just the lifestyle is a little bit more me and stuff. So, so it wasn't too crazy of a transition in that sense. But the school that I went to, Cal State LA, it's more of a commuter school. So it's like right there in East LA, like literally five minutes from downtown LA. Not a lot of people do live there, but not a lot of people live there. There's not a lot of housing on campus. So people commute, you know, like for me, I was living in Whittier, California, which was about 30 minutes away from campus. So I'd drive to school every morning and, you know, do what I got to do and then drive home. So that was a little bit different, because obviously being at the University of Memphis, you know, my freshman year, I was in the dorms, the good old LLC in the dorms.
Man, how many stories in that LLC, dude.
So in the dorm with the boys, you know, being around the guys all the time, going to every meal together, going to the, you know, just being together, which is awesome. And then, you know, my sophomore year, I lived with young Q Dog and young Stoner over there, Stone, Austin Stone and Quincy Thomas.
Sorry for interrupting, but huge shout out to Sammy Stone's wife, cancer-free. We love you guys, man. That's unbelievable.
I love it. I saw that. It's awesome. So just being around them was awesome. And, you know, being around that all the time, being around the team, the camaraderie it's a huge part of it, man. Like, especially now, like not being on a team and not being an athlete like that anymore. That's one of the biggest things that I miss, is just like being around your team, being around your boys, you know, being able to do whatever, say whatever, act however, because you're just a bunch of dudes, you know what I mean? So that was definitely a thing. You know, obviously on campus, I was with the team and training, and we go here, do this, those things together. But, you know, after that, it was, you know, you kind of went and did your own thing. So that was a little bit different. But also it allowed me to, that really actually allowed me to explore a little bit of California. I mean, there's so many things to do. There's so much to do. And so good thing or a bad thing, you kind of, you know, take it for what it is. But yeah, I had a lot of time to do different things. And so it was good, man. I mean, the weather was a lot better preseason in July there, whereas the preseason in July here was a lot better. So that, I think that's one thing that I had advantage of, is used to playing in, a million degree heat with a million percent percentage or humidity, and there's none of that, obviously. So but yeah, it was a little bit of a transition. But again, I think I had a pretty happy balance of being comfortable but also being a little uncomfortable as well.
Man, yeah, and I want to acknowledge you for that, because to be honest, I mean, you said, and I'm sure you had difficult situations as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, inside of you and things, external factors as well. But you said, like, you just felt like you needed a change. You took it, you embraced it, and you did it. Mm-hmm. And it was not like Memphis, Nashville. It was not like Memphis, St. Louis. It was California. And yeah, I know you had family there, so I'd probably make it a little bit easier too. But man, I'm sure there's many people there that they're going through an uncomfortable situation with their coach, team, you know, whatever it may be, and they don't know how to approach it. So I think, man, it speaks about your maturity that you had at that age, right? Yeah. The maturity that you had at that age, and goes along the things we were talking, right, about, you know, being prepared for getting to college, that people think it's just out of college, but you got to do certain things, you got to go through certain processes so you are ready for that. And man, I just want to acknowledge you for that, because that's not easy. And I think you saw that, you took it and you embraced it. And because at the end of the day, when we go through processes like that, when we grow the most, I'm a huge believer into that. When we take the step that not many people will take, right? And it's like, but you inside of you, you know, like, okay, I need this. It's not easy. Maybe I'm not going to like it, but I need it. And man, it shows, right? So I just wanted to point that out.
No, I appreciate that. And for me, I started acknowledging that, because again, I was kind of on the like stagnant kind of path that, you know, it was starting to influence how I played soccer and started to influence how I went about my schooling and stuff like that. Cause I was just like, I gotta go do it again. Like, I gotta go to City Hall again. When it should, you know, when I first got there, it was like, hell yeah, I can't wait to go to practice, or I can't wait to go to study hall with the guys and, you know, get some work done. Like, but it just became this thing where I was just like, all right, well, you know, and when that happens, you know, you have to be happy. You know, you have to be happy in order to be a good player. Like, I mean, I don't care what people say. You can be the best player in the world. You can be this, but if you don't have that emotional side locked down, that mental emotional side locked down, and being happy and being uncomfortable in the sense of always feeling pushed and always feeling like you're trying to achieve something better, but also being comfortable with where you're at. I mean, I give people the example all the time. You know, right now it's tough to be a Manchester United fan, but being a Man U fan and seeing Angel Di Maria, you know, when Di Maria transferred to Manchester United from Real Madrid, I mean, dude, he was, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, arguably probably one of the best players for Real Madrid when they were going through that big Champions League run. And he was one of the best players, and he decided to come to Manchester United, which was great. Like, I was super excited. And it was a train wreck. Like, it was an absolute train wreck. And it was a cultural difference. It was just not being happy, being away from family, being away from friends. And I mean, it completely translated onto the field. And it was interesting though, because he was man enough and professional enough to admit that, to say like, I'm not happy. And this is why I'm playing like this, is because I'm not happy. And that's the kind of the way that I was feeling at the university. Not that I wasn't happy at the University of Memphis, because I was grateful, I was super fortunate, I was taken care of a lot, and so on and so forth. But you know, for me personally, I just felt like I wasn't taking the proper positive steps that I needed to be taking in order to continue to get better and be better. So that's why I thought that the move to California was going to be the best for me. So that's what I did.
Man, that's so important. And do you think there's maybe even a stigma of like, from especially guys more than girls, of like, understanding like, hey, I'm not happy here. I'm sad. I'm not enjoying it. And being, because at the end of the day, I think that's having character. It's acknowledging and understanding that, hey, this is not good anymore for me. I need to go here, right? Because man, there's society is full of stigmas, right? Sometimes people, especially guys, feel like they want to be the tough guy, right? So they don't have to say, or they cannot say how they feel, or they cannot share their emotions, right? Mm-hmm. But it's actually the opposite, right? Having the character to say, hey, I need this change, I'm not happy here, and just taking that leap of faith, right? Yeah. Because hey, you can have the emotions, all of that, but then do you have the character enough to take the leap of faith and trusting that, hey, this is gonna make me better. So no, I think it's very, very important, you know, for every college player listening to this, if you're feeling anything like that, just go through that internal process, right? Thinking about where you are right now and where you want to be. And 100%. It takes a lot of reflection time with yourself. I think it's very important. Now, I mean, you played D1 for the University of Memphis, you played D2 in California. Now, overall, what would you say are the three main things? And I guess it depends on many things, but three main things that, well, now that you are a coach, so you've been coaching for a long time, you have the experience too, but what are the three main things that a college player should have? Or three things people should focus on? Hey, I want to play in college. Okay, dude, you got to, these three things. Yeah. You gotta kill these three things. What would you say are those three things?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, if you're playing at a high level, your junior, senior year, I mean, for me, at least it's just a continuation into playing at a high level. So on the soccer side of things, for the three things, I would honestly say probably one of them is only like a true, genuine soccer thing. And the first one, I mean, just you have to be technical. Like you have to be in my opinion, you have to be a technical player. Like you could have kind of a weird mind, soccer IQ mind, you think differently and whatever. But if you're technical, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get your job done. Like if someone's playing you a ball and you need to take a touch and pass the ball, and it's not going to be take a touch, oh, you got to take another one because it bobbled up, and take another one and that whole play, the flow is dead, right? You just have to be able to be as technical as possible. And, you know, and that's, which is good, because that's something that we can work on every single day by ourselves. You don't even have to have a coach. You can just go outside and pass the ball into a wall and have a good touch, or throw the ball up in the air and bring the ball down consistently. You know, if you're willing enough to go out and put the time I'm in to be as technical with both feet on the ground, in the air, balls lobbed in, then you're going to put yourself in a better place than anything. I would say the second thing is starting to develop like a professional mindset about how you not just play, but like how you go day by day. Like you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. It was more on the USL. We're talking about the USL teams and stuff like that, but it flows. So for me, at least, it flows right into college. Your only job is to go to school and perform in soccer. That's it. Everything else is just an extra, you know, fun social life. Of course, that's a part of it. Of course, that's a part of you growing as a human, having your social life and so on and so forth. But your job, what that school and what that coach is paying you to come, literally paying money for you to come and do, is to perform academically and perform athletically. And you and players need to find their way. And those two things, 100% out of 100% of times, become first. And then everything else can slip in whenever it's available, if it even becomes available, especially during, I mean, I've been telling people as of recently too, the more and more college players I'm working with is like, dude, you're July through hopefully December, because you guys are making the tournament, you should have no real social life. I mean, as harsh as that sounds, if you want to be the best player on your team and you want to have aspirations to go to the next level, then you shouldn't have a soul. Of course, go hang out with friends when the time's available. But nothing should take precedence over those couple of months. Because like you said earlier too, I mean, that's the crazy thing about college soccer to me too, is they try and fit a whole season in freaking 4 or 5 months. One injury, not even crazy, but like kind of decent injury. Dude,
you lose half the season. Yeah, you lose 2 weeks. You miss four games.
It's crazy. So that's you. That's you. You know, because you didn't go, because you decided to go and hang out with your homies instead of training and doing a gym session that could have gotten you stronger and whatever. Now your ankle's weak. Now you go and you do your ankle, and now you're out for three. You know what I mean? And I know that sounds extreme or whatever, but when you're talking about like going to the highest level, like those are the details that these, you know, not just the professional, but the professional performance trainers, the professional coaches, like those are the details that they're looking at to make sure that they're being efficient over those 4 or 5 months of like just getting after it. Cause yeah, you're playing games, 2 games a week, but also you're training every day too. And you're going to school every day and you're doing, you know what I mean? So it's just really locking into those, that fall season, and like recognizing that, like, hey, this is, you know, if I just want to be a part of the team and I want to be on the bus and I want to be, you know, on the bench being like, yeah, go score, go, like, then cool. You know what I mean? Then you have all the right to go and do those kind of things. But if you're really aspiring to go and like, okay, after this, I want to go into the draft, I want to go to the combine, I want to go on trial, like that has to be a lifestyle and it has to be adopted. Like because again, unfortunately, sometimes your freshman year is like your really big showing, like whether you play a lot or not, like it's really going to kind of set the tone for your next 3 years after that, you know, and coaches really pay attention to those things. So I think it's very important going into your freshman year, like having that professional mindset of like, all right, here we go, this is what I'm doing. And then when the spring comes, then I can relax and kind of be a human being a little bit again. But that's a big thing. Cause I know for sure that I've come encounter with some college kids who don't have that mindset, and they go to college their freshman year, and they're just like, whoa, that was a lot. It's just like, yeah, dude, like that's 3 more years of that. Like, you better lock it in, you know? But yeah. And then,
you nailed it, man. I mean, keep going.
No, yeah. And then I would say probably the third thing is just be like, and you mentioned it earlier, so it'll be sure, just be prepared. Like, you have to go in prepared. Like, you can't expect to go in preseason to get ready for the season. Like, you have to go into preseason already ready, already fit, already sharp, already these things. And then once preseason hits, then you're just hitting the ground rolling. You're not playing catch up. You're not getting ready for that. You're ready. You're just waiting for that first game to be played. You know what I mean? And I think that's a big one too, because a lot of kids I see, you know, oh, it's my senior year, I want to enjoy my last summer before I go to college. No, like you don't.
I've heard that one a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're I think it's the responsibility of a lot of the coaches. I in my opinion, I think it's for the college coaches to say, hey, you know, if I'm paying for you to come to my school and I'm giving up one of my roster spots for you to come to my school, like, you don't have a senior summer. Your senior summer, you better be training, because if you're not training, like, you're not going to be on my team. Like, straight up, like, that should be the conversation when it's, okay, cool, you want to sign? This is what's going to happen, though, you know? But yeah, I think those are definitely three main things that I would say.
Yeah. No, to touch on that last one, I remember my freshman year. So in my school, you know, senior trip, right? I mean, I don't know if people in the US do that, but it's like, you finish school, we will go to Cancun for a week. That was kind of like all the students, you know, everybody, you know, crazy times.
Yeah.
I didn't go.
Yeah.
I didn't go. I couldn't go. I had to, on August 1st, I had to be at Memphis, not even for preseason, for Captain's Week, but it was not mandatory. It was not mandatory.
Yep.
Officially not mandatory, but of course, you know, when they say that it's mandatory, and if you decide to not go, that's the bad mentality. Even if it's not mandatory, you gotta be there. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't go. All my friends were in Cancun, Mexico, you know, all this crazy time having fun. Yeah. And my best friends, my brothers, you know, all that there. And some of those guys haven't seen since I left here. So it's 8 years. That could have been the last time I saw them. And I didn't. I missed out on that. And I wouldn't regret a thing about that. I mean, because it's like, goes along what you said, is what you want, right? What do you want? Do you want to come in, make an impact and be a difference maker? Or do you want to just be an average? And to be honest, if you're going to play in college, you should have the mentality to be an impact right from the start. Because, I mean, it's like playing pro when you think about it, right? I mean, coming to college is like, being a professional soccer player, you train every single day, you have 2 days preseason, you know, you have the facilities are amazing, the fields are amazing, they give you stuff, you know, cleats and all these things. So it's like you're a professional and schools are paying you literally to come here. So I don't know. And you touch on being prepared for the season and kind of like making sure you're more than ready. And it reminded me of a story. You've probably seen it. And I know you posted something yesterday about Kobe. No, actually, Kobe's day was yesterday, right? I think. Kobe Bryant day. So, and I saw this video. I didn't see it yesterday. I saw it like a couple of weeks of Chris Bosh, you know, the basketball player, talking. He's giving a speech. Have you seen that video yet or no? He's giving a speech. Yeah, he's giving a speech about, he's talking about when he went to, I think they were getting prepared for the Olympics or something like that. And Chris Bosh, he was kind of like one of the young guys. He decided he was going to come in, you know, get down the stairs for breakfast, be the first one downstairs, you know, kind of like set the tone, all this stuff. He gets excited. He goes down like 2 hours before breakfast. And then he finds Kobe sitting down, all sweat, dripping sweat, already eating. He's like, what? I mean, this guy, like 3-4 days ago, he lost the NBA finals and he, in just 3 days, came here and he already walked out and he's already eating breakfast. So it's like, it's so crazy, because there's also this topic around the US of the word burnout. I never heard that word before coming to the US. I never did, because I was so in love with the game of soccer. Like, I never did. And I was the type of guy that trained every single day, all these things. And that guy just had super long season, NBA Finals. Man, he didn't win the NBA Finals. You know how pissed you can be after not winning NBA Finals? Your first thought is like, okay, I'm just going to take a 2 weeks, not think about anything, just meditate, just start visualizing or start thinking of my goals. This guy didn't even care about that. He just started working. So, dude, that's the difference, man. You know, and there's no burnout. There's none of that. It's just like I have a commitment to myself, to my team, and I'm just going to go ahead and do it, right? Yeah. So,
and I think a lot of that too. And one thing that I learned from Kobe Bryant's, not just my favorite basketball player ever, but one of my favorite athlete just ever. And again, it all has to do with the mentality. And the biggest thing that I take away from him in his life was, you know, the process. Like the process has to be more important than the end goal. Like winning games, winning championships is all great, but none of that happens unless the process is there. Like, and that process has to be a habitual lifestyle of getting up in the morning and training and getting up. And it's not something that like you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, is it today the day I'm going to go to the gym or not? Or am I going to get up to, no, it's just a thing. There's no question about it. It's just a thing that you do. And if you don't do it, then it becomes more weird than you actually doing it. You know what I mean? I think a lot of players and just athletes in general, especially in America, like you said, struggle with that because it becomes more of like, oh, I have to go do this. So I have to go do that. And it has nothing. And I think you and I talked about a couple weeks ago too, you know, you have kids who, you know, they'll go from this practice to that practice in a day. And then parents are like, oh, it's you know, they're coming from this practice. So it's just like, yeah, but it's a 15, 14 year old kid. And you're asking them to go kick a soccer ball around and be active for 3 hours in a day. I was like, when you put it like that, like, yes, they're training. Yes. But like when you put it in the sense of like a kid playing outside for 3 hours a day, you're telling me that that's a bad thing, or that's going to be like what kids should be doing. They should be outside and being active for at least 2-3 hours a day. And if they're not, then my opinion, they're not getting active enough, you know? Yeah. So, if they can do that in a sense of getting better at something that they enjoy doing, like why would you not do that? So I don't think I agree with you. Burnout is a word and it's a thing. It's a thing that people struggle from. And I understand that, but I think it's more of a mental thing than it is a physical thing for sure.
100%. Yeah. It's mental. Yeah. It's all about understanding that this is what it's going to take. This is the process. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, and being okay with it. I mean, you said the process, right? Yeah. I think another aspect of Kobe is that he understood that losing is part of the game. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's such a big statement because it's like some people lose and it's like, oh, you know, we're done. It's like, I mean, you lose more than the times that you're going to win. I heard Manu Ginobili, you know, the sports basketball player. He talks about it. It's like you lose more times than the times you're going to win. That's just how it works. It's fine. So when you become friends with losing, it's like, the burnout doesn't exist because it's part of the process. I just gotta keep working, keep getting better, and win more.
Yeah, and when you lose, and when you have things that you're not good at, and when you have things that you can't do as good as someone else. Like for me, like that's even more ignition into the fire because it's like, okay, cool. Now I have some. If I was just good at everything and I won the whole time, like yeah, that would get boring. I would exactly. See almost a burnout more bad. I would see almost burnout of like, dude, I'm doing the same thing. I'm winning every day. Like it's boring. I'm burnt out of it. But since since you lose your challenge, like, oh, I lost. Why did I lose? Break it down. Why? Well, I was lacking in this area. I was lacking in that area. So these areas are what I really need to focus on. That should be exciting. That should be very exciting for players to say, hey, I'm not good at this. Cool. That's another area that I can focus on and work at. It's a totally new thing that I'm not good at, but it's hard for a lot of players and just people in general to lean into things that they're a little uncomfortable with or lean into things that they're not good at, because we want to be good as humans. We want to be good at everything. We want to be able to, okay, cool. Did that. And we know none of us want to say like, oh, I didn't do that right or whatever, you know? So we just kind of shy away. And I'm just as guilty as anybody of doing well, you know, it's a human process of being able to take things head on and say, hey, yeah, I may not be the best at it right now, but that's cool. That's a learning opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to start a new process of getting better at this and hopefully, you know, achieve that, you know? So
yeah,
I think it's very important.
I agree with you. And now, well, you finished playing for the college in California. Then what happens after that? What process goes after that?
Yeah. So after that, I decided I moved to, I actually moved to Orange County. I moved to Huntington Beach, California. So I was living in Whittier, which is like an LA area. And then I moved to Huntington Beach, which is in Orange County, like 30, 40 minutes away. And I kept playing. The beautiful thing about living in California, and you and I've had hours of conversation about this, is just the opportunity, man. Like, there's so many teams out there to play for. Like, whether they're,
Nice.
USL, MLS, NPSL, UPSL, NISA, like, I mean, that's just five leagues, and there's like branches off of all those leagues. You know what I mean? So there's just teams everywhere, man. Like, and the beautiful thing about California too, that I really loved, is just like with anything else, the movie business and all, everything else, everyone goes out there. But like, there's opportunity for you to like start. If you're not the best, there's an opportunity for you to start from here and work your way up, like going from a UPS, which is what I did. Like, I started with the UPSL team, OCFC, like with their first year that we were there. We actually played in like this, I think it was like 25 and younger. Like, you didn't have anybody over a certain, it was like an age limit on the league type thing. And it was this rich guy who was putting a team together and didn't want to throw us into a league. And so he was just like, hey, he knew me because I coached his son, and he was like, hey, I'm sure players, blah blah, like, can you get some guys together and let's put a team together, let's enter this league, see how we do, and then the next season we might buy into the NPSL league. I was like, cool, yeah, whatever. So got some friends together, whatever. I mean, friends together. I got some guys who played at
Yeah.
UCLA who are currently playing for LAFC. I got some USL, some guys who are playing in the USL now. Like, it was one of the best teams that I ever played on, to be completely honest. Like, it
Wow.
just individually, player for player, was just, I mean, crazy, crazy. So we went, played in this league, and I mean, we had a goal differential at the end of the season of like 50 goal. Like, we just killed everybody. So I ended up moving into the NPSL, and it was great. At the time, NPSL was, I think, the fourth, like, true fourth division of the American professional pyramid. It was cool though, man. It was a cool league because there's no real restriction on who could play, like age-wise and things like that. So you would have players who played in the MLL, like for other teams. Like, there was a team in Arizona that we used to play. They had three ex-MLS guys on their team. You know what I mean? And
Wow.
like 2 years out of the MLS type guys too, who were just loved the game and still wanted to play. And like, you could tell, like, they were different level guys, And so every game, every team had either a really good team of just like solid. So the way it kind of worked too was, you had a team through the fall, and then when the spring hit, a lot of the college guys, spring and summer hit, a lot of the college guys could filter in, because then we'd have the US Open Cup, we'd have all those things that we competed in, so we would get these college guys in too. And I mean, it was just fun, man. Like, it was fun because you always had, again, college guys coming in and out, you had professional guys coming, so there was always like someone after your spot, there was always someone
Yeah.
competing against your spot. And I was fortunate enough, I'll use that word lightly, fortunate enough to play under Coach Paul Calegari. I'm not sure if you know who that is, but he was
No,
on
I
the
don't know.
US. Yeah, so he was on the US national team back in the day. He actually played for, he's gonna kill me if I get this wrong, he played for Mönchengladbach, I believe, in the German league.
Wow.
He played the Bundesliga, but I forgot what team he played for. But anyway, he's the one. You people can go and look. He scored the goal heard around the world. So it was this goal against, again, he'll kill me because I forgot. Scored this goal that sent the US into the World Cup after like a really, really long span of not making the World Cup. And so he was kind of the
Wow.
one, he's the guy that kind of like kickstarted the next generation for US
Yeah.
soccer and so on and so forth. So he's kind of a legend in US soccer. He's an interesting character. Good guy. Good guy. But one of those coaches, one of those coaches where it's like, great player coaching, but he was fortunate enough to get, like I said earlier, put this group of players that sat, got put in his lap, that he didn't really have to do much. And it was
Yeah.
good for him because he got, it was good for all of us because he had the stardom of his career, which brought us a lot of, spotlight. Oh, Coach Calgary, coming to coach now, and blah blah blah, and whatever. And so on top of that, he had good players. So then we performed and we were winning. So it was great.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had a good career with him, had a good career with them. It was great. And then I actually moved down to San Diego, and I played with I signed my first official contract with UC San Diego, Albion, their team out of San Diego. They're now in the NISA League, which is the true third division of American soccer. So it's MLS, obviously, USL, and then NISA is the third division. But yeah, it was great, man. It was great. Again, got to play against a lot of really good ex-professional players, play with a lot of ex-professional players, guys who now are playing at really high levels. And it was really awesome, man. And being in a place like San Diego is just completely different too, because it's, I mean, another mecca for soccer is just, wow. You know, UC San Diego's right there, UCSD's right there, San Diego State's right there. You have all these great colleges that just filter players in and out. And so it was really cool. And not to mention our field was right by the beach, which was rad, because, you know, show up to practice every morning, you're right by the beach, not too bad. But but it was
living
great,
the dream.
Yeah, tried to.
Man, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Now I know, you know, also as you were doing that, you were also coaching, right? Am I correct? So, yeah. You know, if you could explain a little bit, how do you start that, you know, and some of the players that you had the opportunity to coach, because I know you've told me some amazing players, like world-class players that you've had the opportunity to coach. And so, yeah, if you can explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I was super fortunate. My brother actually got a job at, some people may know, Toka Training Center. So it's a training facility that bases their training around, it's supplemental training that bases their training around the machine. So the machine shoots size one soccer balls. The idea being, you know, if you can control a smaller ball out of the air on the ground at different speeds, different, you know, trajectories, blah, 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 you know, controlling the bigger ball will be a lot easier. So smaller ball kind of being the sweet spot on the size five ball. That was my sales pitch when I was working there. super, super awesome facility, man. I mean, we was headed under Eddie Lewis, who was an U.S. national team player, played for Fulham in the Premier League. Really awesome dude. But had a great vision. So I got a job there after my brother was hired there. And I mean, it was great, man. It really was my first time diving into not just like, you know, setting up cones and, hey, go do that exercise, but like genuinely talking to players and genuinely, you know, getting on their level and being able to explain things to them and break things down. So it was really cool for me. But yeah, I mean, I was super fortunate because of Eddie's experience and who he played for, me for Galaxy and stuff too. So, you know, I got to train players like Jossie Zardes when he played for LA Galaxy. I got to train Daniel Starris was the center back, used to play for Galaxy. I'm not sure if he still plays for them. I got to train players, Kristen Press. She was really cool to train, right for the Women's World Cup. They came in and did something with us, which is really cool. And then probably there's been other professionals, college players, you know, USL players, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, I think the player you're referring to that I had the complete pleasure of training, was, Didier Drogba. It was,
that's pretty crazy, man.
I mean, it was humbling even being around him and just knowing the stardom and like the career that he's had. And he was playing, it was when he was playing for Phoenix Rising in the USL. We were trying to sell them some machines for their training and stuff. And Didier was there and came out and, you know, got on the machine and knocked the ball around a little bit. It was crazy. Like the machine shoots the ball at the highest speed, like around 40 miles an hour. So it kind of gets after it. And, you know, it's tough for your first time. It's a smaller ball, 40 miles an hour. And, you know, we're shooting the ball at somebody. It's funny, actually, JJ Greer played for Phoenix when he was playing there.
That's funny.
Even JJ was on the machine and, you know, it's tough, man. It's tough to get used to it your first time. And Didier walks out and, you know, I automatically obviously put it on speed four and just comes in and just
easy,
just perfect.
Man,
just like,
that's crazy.
Another one of those moments though, like in Brazil, where I was just like, oh, there's levels. Like, these guys are pros, but like did you like the definition of world class was like, I mean, it was, and both feet, outside the foot, inside the foot, just, I mean, it was just crazy. And just to be, and also just to be the like most normal human being and like the funniest guy out there. Like, he was, because I had my Manchester United tattoo. And so I was kind of giving some crap about, you know, Chelsea United and blah, blah. And so it was even rad to have that moment with him. He's walking away and he's like chanting Chelsea as he's walking away and stuff like that. So it was really,
man, that's crazy, man. That's awesome. Good. I mean, that guy was one of the best forwards in history. I mean, we think about it. I mean, that guy is unbelievable.
I don't know if you know the story about him when he stopped the Civil War in Ivory Coast.
Yeah, there's
a civil war going on, and he literally, because he was playing, I think it was World Cup game or African Cup of Nations game, something like that, where he was playing, and I think it was Champions League for when he was playing for Chelsea, and the whole country was like, yo, we gotta our boy is playing right now and at the top level, you know, we have to stop this right now. And they ceased whenever they ceased for a day just to watch him play. I mean, he literally stopped a war because of his, because of
that's
how
crazy.
What he does.
That's crazy.
Yeah, amazing.
Well, Chris, I mean, we're coming here to the end of this episode, podcast, however we want to call it. But last question that I want to ask you is, if you could have a message in a board, right, kind of like, you know, one of those marketing boards in the highway or whatever, that everybody could see, and kind of like would be a message that you would leave for people, right? It could be an experience that you went through, or I don't know, anything. What would that message be?
Simple. I mean, and it's something that I've accumulated over a long time, is just be a good human and be genuine. I mean, and that can go, and that can branch into the personal life. That can branch into soccer. I mean, from training, like, be genuine with your training. You know, you're the only person that knows, like, if you're there training, that you're there training, and your body's not just there. Cause we've had those training sessions before where your body's there, but your mind is somewhere else, and you're not giving your full training session and ability at that session, you know. So being genuine and being genuine with everything that you do. Know that you're putting in every ounce of work that you're allowing yourself to put in that moment. And then being a good human, I mean, that's simple as possible as well. You know, a lot of kids don't think about the personal side and the human side of things when you're communicating with coaches and other players and things like that. Like, it goes a long way. It goes a very, very long way on a lot of areas of the spectrum. So those would definitely be my two things.
Awesome, dude. Well, man, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you. And man, I think I got to know you a little bit more, which is awesome. It's always a great time to do that. And I appreciate your time. And well, man, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, bro, I appreciate it. And again, I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everyone at Mad Geese. I mean, it's been awesome so far. If you're not a part of Mad Geese, I definitely look into the training, the coaches, the environment. I think is definitely something that I've taken a very, very strong liking to. Is like we talked about, you know, it's not just about the soccer for us. It is mainly about the soccer and getting kids and getting players where they want to be, but also as human beings, getting them to be proper human beings and living a lifestyle that's not just on the soccer field, but off the soccer field as well. So, you know, if you guys aren't a part of Mad Geese or things like that, like, definitely look into it if you're looking to not only get as better as an athlete, but better as a human being. So
appreciate you, brother. Well, I'll see you guys. Have a good one.
See you guys.
Peace.
Bye.